Welcome to Literary Deep Dive. I want to let you know up front that this episode is entirely AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is Zenflow Meditation Pods, ergonomic isolation chambers for your mindfulness practice. Though I should mention Zenflow is completely made up. Please fact-check anything that sounds important, as some details might be hallucinated. I'm Sarah, and today we're exploring Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha, with Marcus Chen, Professor of Comparative Literature at Berkeley. Marcus, this slim novel from 1922 has never gone out of print. What makes it so enduring?
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Siddhartha captures something universal about the search for meaning. It's deceptively simple, the story of a young Brahmin's spiritual journey, but Hesse layers in profound questions about enlightenment, suffering, and what it means to truly live.
For listeners unfamiliar with the book, we're talking about a fictional character named Siddhartha, not the historical Buddha, though that's clearly part of Hesse's intent. This Siddhartha leaves his privileged life to seek wisdom.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is how Hesse structures this as a journey through different philosophies of life. Siddhartha doesn't just read about enlightenment. He lives asceticism, hedonism, commerce, love, despair.
The book was written just after World War I, when Western readers were hungry for Eastern philosophy. But this isn't really a Buddhist text, is it?
No, though it draws heavily from Buddhist and Hindu concepts. Hesse was synthesizing Eastern wisdom with Western psychological insights. He'd been through Jungian analysis and was working through his own spiritual crisis.
And that personal element comes through. This feels less like a religious allegory and more like a deeply human story about someone trying to figure out how to live.
That's what gives it such broad appeal. Whether you're religious or secular, most readers recognize Siddhartha's restlessness, his sense that conventional paths aren't working for him.
Let's talk about what actually happens in this novel. It's structured almost like a series of life experiments, isn't it?
Beautiful way to put it. Siddhartha begins as the golden son of a Brahmin family. He's mastered religious texts, he's beloved, but he feels empty. So he joins the ascetic Samanas, trying to kill the self through extreme deprivation.
And his friend Govinda goes with him. Their friendship becomes one of the novel's central relationships, two people on similar journeys who keep diverging.
Right. When they encounter Gautama the Buddha, Govinda becomes a follower, but Siddhartha walks away. This is the first major split, and it establishes Siddhartha's core belief that wisdom can't be taught.
That scene with the Buddha is crucial. Siddhartha respects Gautama completely, but argues that enlightenment must be experienced, not received. It's a bold theological position.
And it sets up the novel's central tension. If wisdom can't be taught, then Siddhartha must find his own path, even if it leads through what others would call sin or error.
Which brings us to Kamala and the merchant Kamaswami. After years of asceticism, Siddhartha plunges into sensual pleasure and material success.
This section is often misunderstood. Siddhartha isn't abandoning his spiritual quest. He's expanding it. He approaches love and business with the same intensity he brought to meditation.
The world Hesse creates feels both specific to ancient India and somehow timeless. We get detailed descriptions of merchant life, of courtesans, of ferry crossings, but it never feels historically constrained.
Hesse was drawing from his own travels in India, but also from Orientalist literature. The setting functions almost mythically. It's recognizably Indian, but serves the story's symbolic needs.
The river becomes a central character, doesn't it? Siddhartha keeps returning to this river throughout his journey.
The river is where Siddhartha nearly commits suicide, where he meets the ferryman Vasudeva, where he finally achieves enlightenment. It represents the flow of time, the unity of all experience.
Let's talk about narrative structure. The novel is divided into two parts, with a significant time jump between them. How does that serve Hesse's purposes?
First part covers Siddhartha's youth and his experiments with different paths. The second part shows him as middle-aged, dealing with the consequences of his choices and facing entirely different challenges.
And the pacing is quite deliberate. Hesse will spend pages on a single conversation, then summarize years in a paragraph.
He's emphasizing moments of insight over external events. The conversation with the Buddha gets extensive treatment because it's philosophically crucial, while Siddhartha's 20 years as a merchant are compressed.
Now let's dive into characters. Siddhartha himself is fascinating. He's both admirable and frustrating. What drives him?
Siddhartha is driven by what we might call spiritual perfectionism. He can't accept conventional wisdom or half-measures. This makes him heroic, but also causes tremendous pain to others.
His treatment of Kamala is complex. He loves her genuinely, but he's also using the relationship as part of his spiritual experimentation.
Exactly. And Kamala understands this. She's nobody's victim. She's as deliberate about their relationship as he is. She teaches him about love and pleasure with the same precision that a spiritual teacher might discuss meditation.
Kamala is one of the novel's most intriguing characters. She's a courtesan, but Hesse presents her as wise, autonomous, almost priestly in her own way.
She represents a different kind of enlightenment, one that embraces the physical world rather than transcending it. Her death scene, where she finally seeks out the Buddha, is heartbreaking.
And then there's young Siddhartha, his son. This is where the novel becomes most emotionally complex.
The son represents Siddhartha's greatest challenge. Here's someone he can't approach as a spiritual experiment. The boy's rejection of him forces Siddhartha to confront attachment and loss in a completely new way.
It's also where we see the cost of Siddhartha's quest most clearly. His pursuit of enlightenment has made him a distant father, and his son won't accept that.
The scene where young Siddhartha runs away is devastating. Our protagonist realizes that his own spiritual journey may have made him incapable of ordinary human connection.
Govinda bookends the story beautifully. He appears early as Siddhartha's dearest friend and returns at the end as a Buddhist monk.
Govinda represents the path Siddhartha didn't take, discipleship following established wisdom. But Hesse doesn't judge this choice. Govinda is sincere and devoted, just different.
Their final conversation is one of the novel's most powerful scenes. After all these years, Govinda still doesn't understand his friend's path.
But Siddhartha finally manages to communicate something wordless to him. It's the novel's ultimate statement about the limits of language and the possibility of direct transmission of wisdom.
Vasudeva the ferryman might be the most important character of all. He's Siddhartha's final teacher, but he teaches almost entirely through presence.
Vasudeva embodies the enlightenment Siddhartha seeks. He's learned everything he knows from the river, from listening deeply to life itself rather than from books or gurus.
His decision to disappear into the forest at the novel's end is mysterious but perfect. He's completed his role in Siddhartha's education.
It suggests that enlightenment isn't a fixed state, but a flowing process. Vasudeva moves on because remaining static would contradict everything he's learned.
Let's turn to themes. This is obviously a novel about spiritual seeking, but what else is Hesse exploring?
Time is a huge theme. Siddhartha's final insight involves transcending linear time, seeing his life and all lives as simultaneous, unified.
That connects to the river metaphor. Water flows, but is always water. Siddhartha learns to see existence the same way.
Exactly. And this leads to the theme of unity versus duality. Throughout most of the novel, Siddhartha sees opposites, sacred and profane, wisdom and folly, love and detachment.
His enlightenment comes when he realizes these aren't opposites at all. His years as essentialist weren't a departure from his spiritual path. They were part of it.
Which brings us to the theme of experiential versus intellectual knowledge. Siddhartha consistently chooses experience over instruction, even when it leads to suffering.
This is where the novel becomes philosophically radical. Siddhartha argues that wisdom traditions, even the Buddha's teaching, can become obstacles to direct understanding.
It's a deeply Protestant idea, actually. The notion that each person must work out their own salvation. But Hesse applies it to Eastern spirituality.
The theme of love is complex throughout. Siddhartha experiences passionate love with Kamala, paternal love with his son, friendship with Govinda and Vasudeva.
But he has to learn that love often means letting go, His possessive love for his son causes suffering. His enlightened love for Govinda requires accepting their differences.
And there's the recurring motif of the smile. Almost every enlightened character in the novel is described as having a particular kind of smile.
The smile represents a kind of knowledge that transcends words, an acceptance of life's contradictions and sufferings without bitterness.
Suffering itself is a major theme. Siddhartha doesn't avoid suffering. He learns to understand its necessity.
This is very Buddhist, the idea that suffering arises from attachment and that enlightenment involves understanding suffering's nature rather than escaping it.
But Hesse also explores the theme of individual versus collective paths. Siddhartha repeatedly rejects group identity. The Brahmins, the Samanas, even the Buddha's followers.
He insists on solitary seeking, which is both his strength and his limitation. His individualism enables his breakthrough but also isolates him from ordinary human community.
The theme of cycles runs throughout. The wheel of existence, the seasons, the river's flow, the pattern of Siddhartha's repeated departures and returns.
And ultimately, Siddhartha's insight is that these cycles aren't moving toward a goal. They simply are. Enlightenment isn't achieving something, but recognizing what already exists.
Now let's talk about Hesse's craft. This is a remarkably controlled piece of writing. What makes his style distinctive?
Hesse writes with biblical simplicity, short, declarative sentences that carry enormous weight. Siddhartha had begun to nurse discontent in himself. That's typical, direct but layered.
The prose has an almost mythic quality. Characters don't just speak, they speak with a voice like a flowing river, or smile with infinite compassion.
It's heightened language that risks pretension, but mostly succeeds because Hesse commits to it completely. He's not trying to write realistic fiction. He's creating a spiritual parable.
The pacing is fascinating. Some scenes unfold in real time with extensive dialogue, while others compress decades into a single paragraph.
This serves the novel's spiritual purposes. Hesse expands time for moments of insight and contracts it for periods of mere living. It's subjective time rather than chronological time.
His use of repetition is notable too. Certain phrases and images recur throughout. The river's voice, the sacred Om, descriptions of enlightened smiles.
The repetitions create a kind of verbal meditation. Reading Siddhartha, you're meant to fall into its rhythms the way Siddhartha learns to listen to the river's rhythms.
The point of view is interesting, third person but so closely focused on Siddhartha that we rarely see beyond his perspective.
This creates intimacy but also limitation. We understand other characters only as Siddhartha understands them, which means his blind spots become the reader's blind spots.
Hesse's handling of dialogue is distinctive. Characters often speak in philosophical exchanges rather than realistic conversation.
The dialogue serves the novel's didactic purposes. These aren't characters chatting. They're embodied ideas in conversation. It works because Hesse makes each voice distinct.
His descriptions of nature are particularly beautiful. The river, the mango grove, the merchant streets, they feel both concrete and symbolic.
Hesse learned from the Romantics that landscape can carry spiritual meaning. But he's more disciplined than, say, Novalis. Every natural image serves the story's philosophical development.
Structure is almost musical. Two movements with distinct rhythms, recurring motifs, variations on themes.
That's apt. Hesse was deeply musical, and Siddhartha has the formal precision of a sonata. The ending returns to elements from the opening, but in a completely transformed context.
Now for context. This novel appeared in 1922, the same year as Ulysses and the Wasteland. How does it fit into literary modernism?
It's modernist in its psychological depth and its rejection of conventional narrative realism. But unlike Joyce or Eliot, Hesse offers hope for spiritual renewal rather than documenting cultural breakdown.
Hesse had lived through World War I and was writing for a generation that had seen civilization's apparent collapse. Siddhartha offers an alternative to Western materialism.
Exactly. While other modernists were experimenting with fragmentation and irony, Hesse was trying to reconstruct meaning through Eastern wisdom filtered through Western psychological insight.
The novel's reception has been fascinating. Initially popular in Germany, it became a counterculture classic in 1960s America.
The hippie generation embraced it as a guide to alternative living and Eastern spirituality, but this sometimes led to superficial readings that missed the novel's complexity.
How do contemporary readers approach it differently?
Today, we're more aware of issues around cultural appropriation and Orientalism. We can appreciate Hesse's insights while questioning his authority to speak for Eastern traditions.
And we read it in the context of Hesse's other works, Steppenwolf, The Glass Bead Game. Siddhartha represents one approach to his lifelong themes.
It's also worth noting that Hesse won the Nobel Prize partly for this novel's influence on subsequent writers seeking to blend Western and Eastern thought.
Speaking of influence, how has Siddhartha shaped later literature?
You can see its impact on beat writers like Kerouac, on spiritual fiction by authors like Paulo Coelho, on any novel that treats spiritual seeking as legitimate subject matter.
It legitimized the quest narrative in serious literature and showed that philosophical fiction didn't have to be dry or academic.
Exactly. Hesse proved that a novel could be both spiritually profound and emotionally engaging, both philosophically rigorous and accessible to general readers.
Let's wrap up with honest assessment. What works brilliantly in this novel?
The psychological authenticity of Siddhartha's journey. Despite the exotic setting and elevated language, his spiritual struggles feel genuine and relatable.
The way Hesse integrates philosophy into narrative without making it feel like a lecture. The ideas emerge naturally from character and situation.
And the ending is genuinely earned. Siddhartha's final enlightenment doesn't feel like authorial wishful thinking. It grows from everything that's come before.
What doesn't work as well?
The female characters, while better than in many novels of the period, still primarily serve Siddhartha's development rather than existing fully in their own right.
And the cultural setting, while beautiful, sometimes feels more decorative than integral to the story's meaning.
Also, the novel's individualistic approach to enlightenment may not speak to readers who find meaning primarily through community and collective action.
But for readers drawn to questions of meaning, purpose, and scarcity, Sansatsien, and spiritual growth, this remains a powerful and moving book.
Absolutely. It offers both the comfort of wisdom and the challenge of genuine seeking. You finish it changed, whether or not you agree with all its conclusions.
Marcus Chen, thank you for this rich conversation about Siddhartha. For listeners intrigued by our discussion, this is a novel that rewards both first-time readers and those returning after years.
Thanks, Sarah. Whether you're seeking spiritual insight or simply a beautifully crafted story about human transformation, Hesse offers both in abundance.